affectivity of a person. And I stress that to the extent that what God is meeting in a person's life is what has been victimized, his treatment, God's treatment of that is compassionate and gentle. I stressed that in the last class, and I mentioned in terms of that is not explicit in, for instance, the Ignatian treatment of discernment. The gentleness of God in dealing with the effects of sin in ourselves. And that's why I think people can go through the meditations on sin of the spiritual exercises of Ignatius and experience nothing but a healing movement as they're going through that, because what is being touched is the effects of the sin of the world in themselves, the victimized dimensions. But I want to emphasize at this point that, again, here speaking from an explicit Christian faith position on discernment, God can enter into human life in other ways as well. It's still out of love. But to the extent that the person is free to do something and is not doing it, and here's where Ignatius' first rule for the discernment becomes quite clear. God's entrance into human life is in a way that is shocking, that seems violent. His entrance into the history of Israel in prophetic words of denunciation, for instance, and bringing about an abrupt about face. So, to the extent that the person is able and not willing, the entrance of the love of God into that person's life may be experienced in a quite abrupt fashion. So it's not always that his way of coming to meet us, to bring us beyond our futility, is this way that is experienced in gentleness. It depends on what he's dealing with in us and the person that he is dealing with, and the freedom, the effective freedom that that person has. I have had experience as a retreat director in which the whole early part of a long retreat may very well be a matter of God's dealing with the victimized complexes of a person in gentleness and healing. And only later on, as the retreat draws to a close, does the whole address of God to personal sin become clear in the person's religious experience in the course of the retreat. As the freedom is opened up and perhaps is not responding, at that point, the movement of God in a person's life is very different from what we've been talking about in terms of that experience of love opening up a free space. So I would put it this way, and moving briefly here into the whole issue of discernment. To the extent that a person's freedom can be effectively addressed, the relationship of the person to God might not be experienced as a very gentle kind of thing. My feelings might be going along a disordered route because I'm freely doing something that drives them that way. And if that's the case, the entrance of God into my life may be very shocking and abrupt. In order to awaken my attention to the misuse of my own responsibility to what I am doing. So much here depends on who the person is, where they're at, what is being dealt with. It's a very delicate thing, for instance, for a director to determine. Now again, even if this, what I've just been talking about is true, where the dealing of the relationship is a very abrupt and forceful one, perhaps a shocking entrance or intervention of God into a person's life, It is the love of God that's at work. Guilt is not God's favorite emotion. It's not there simply to drive the person into the feelings of despondency, but to awaken the person's attention to the misuse of freedom. Are you with me up to this point? Okay. Moral conversion and the role of affectivity. This is number three there under B. As the gift of God's love moves further into human consciousness, if the kind of model that I'm proposing is at all on target, it affects next the existential level of consciousness. The level of responding to values. It opens a person up to a new appreciation of moral values. Moral values that previously the person may have been oblivious to. For instance, the value of taking responsibility for my own darkness. Couldn't see before because I hated the darkness so much. I'm opened up to the moral value of taking responsibility for it. The gift of love, as it affects a person more and more, frees that person to respond to values that previously person could not acknowledge, except with great difficulty, but could not affectively acknowledge, at least. Because I'm indicating, I'm trying to argue here that the gift of love frees affectivity, and it frees the person affectively to respond to values that previously, affectively, I couldn't respond to. Perhaps intellectually I could, but not affectively. And if not affectively, then also not effectively in terms of my life. If I can't respond with free affectivity, I can't effectively respond. Moral conversion, Lonergan defines as the shift from satisfactions to values. As the criterion for my decision. A shift from satisfactions to values as the criterion for my decision. What is the difference between satisfaction and value? They're not necessarily divergent from one another. What is satisfying may also be worthwhile. So, in other words, this is not a life-denying position or a denial of, you know, pleasure and so on and so forth. What is genuinely satisfying may also be really worthwhile. But it's not always the case. What is really worthwhile may, in a given instance, be not very pleasant. I have to do a certain amount of exercise in order to maintain my health, which is a value, and I may hate it. No satisfaction. Jogging is boring. But the value is such that it calls me beyond the satisfaction. But, in other words, there is neither an identity nor an absolute non-identity between satisfaction and value. Love between two human beings is satisfying. It is also eminently worthwhile. Listening to music is satisfying, and it is also the appreciation of aesthetic value. In those cases, in those instances, satisfaction and value respond to the same object.
But there may also be cases where that is not what is going on, where that is not the case.
Okay. The difference between satisfaction and value is the degree of self-transcendence to which I am carried.
Or perhaps more clearly put, the difference between making satisfaction and making value a criterion of my decisions
is that when I respond to value, I am responding to something because it is worthwhile. In that very response, I may experience satisfaction. But I am responding to it because it is worthwhile, and it carries me beyond myself to an appreciation of beauty, to a love of goodness, to a love of another person, to a commitment to truth, to whatever it might happen to be in a given case. Value carries a person beyond himself or herself. The person who responds, whose criterion for decision is the worthwhileness of things, is a self-transcending person. There may be a great deal of satisfaction in the response, in the experience, but that's not the reason for the response. It's not the criterion of the response. In fact, I would say that at the highest degree of moral development, satisfaction and value coincide. The person who does what is good because it is good also experiences great peace in doing it, spontaneity in doing it. Talking, for instance, of Kohlberg's stages of moral development, when you get down to the sixth stage of moral development, satisfaction and value coincide again. Because the only thing the person desires is what is really good. And so there's a coincidence between your sense of desire and your response. Now, the affective significance of moral conversion is that values are first responded to in feelings. The first apprehension of a possible value will be an affective apprehension. I propose to you a possible value. Your apprehension of that value will be affective. It will be an affective apprehension. I might propose to someone, for instance, that in terms, if you wish to get anything out of this course, you've got to work at it three times more than you're doing so far. I'm proposing that as a possible value. Your response is affective. Negative. It's an affective apprehension. You apprehend it affectively. On the other hand, I might propose to you something where, in a different way, your feeling would go towards it, but it's an affective apprehension. So values are first apprehended in feelings, and so as our feelings are healed, the world of possible values opens up. Previously, we were blind to certain dimensions of the world of possible values. But as our feelings are healed, we begin to see possible values where we couldn't see them before. And I think in terms of the kind of thing that I've been trying to present here, the first place where we begin to see that is the possible value of taking responsibility for my own darkness. I couldn't see the value of that. If I was plagued by self-hatred, I couldn't see the worthwhileness of it, the value of it. I was blind to it. Now remember, at each of these levels, conversion is not perfection. Becoming a morally good person is a long process. Moral conversion is that initial shift in what you want to take as the criterion for your decisions. Now, effectively doing that so that you come to the point where decision after decision after decision, you are responding to what is worthwhile. That's a long, long process. Kohlberg has emphasized that, the process of moral development. The same thing is true with religious conversion. Meeting God is not becoming Teresa of Avila overnight. It's not mystical union. It's a long process that leads to that. And the same thing will be true of intellectual conversion, but that's something that we're going to leave till next week because it's a bit complicated. So are there any questions on what we've taken? Yes.
Just to go back to the you create a vector, and the fifth stage you said was the religious level. But actually, at that fifth level, it's something from outside coming in.
Something that enables me to rest in the fulfillment of the strivings of the creative factor. Yes. Now, that can be the love of another human being.
All right, but it's not within me, though.
That's
right. Something from outside of me that...
That awakens that level of consciousness.
Okay.
That level of consciousness is within you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a level of consciousness at which you rest in the fulfillment of your desires for meaning and goodness. You experience that. If you didn't experience it, then I wouldn't say that there is a level of consciousness in you. But what brings that about is offered by that. Okay, we'll complete this material at the healing bench.